For July the 29th, 2016, we talk about that tiny little NES inside, and we ask you what's most important in games, gameplay, narrative, or atmosphere. Be sure to stick around after the end for Inside Spoiler Chat with me and Ben, because you are now welcome to Level 159. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in and for giving us last week's break. I was on vacation. I was getting the top of my feet cooked, seared by the sun, and off the coast of Virginia, and getting sunsick. Yeah, that part of it kind of sucks.
Only the tops of your feet?
Well, so here's the thing. when I think, hey, I'm going to go to a pool or to the ocean, I'm in the mindset of, yeah, I'm going to be in the water all the time. So I really just need to put sunscreen, like, basically from the waist up, because I'm going to be in the water. yeah. And it was like the second day we were there, we decided to go to the sandbar. And that was really cool. Like, I'd never been in a sandbar before. Like, you had to take a boat out to it. We're walking around, like, one side of it was real steep, a lot of birds and stuff. The sandbar was made entirely of seagull skulls, but not really any real opportunity to be in very deep water. So imagine just, you know, spending like 3 or 4 hours walking around, fastidiously, like every half hour, reapply and like spray suntan, stuff on your shoulders and on your face and stuff like that. Like, yeah, we're going to do this. And, you know, a sunburn doesn't really set in for a couple of hours. Well, you know, again, walking around on crushed seagull skulls and, you know, looking through binoculars at some cool heron, I think they were. And then getting home and realizing, oh, my feet feel like they're going to split open like overcooked hot dogs. Yeah. Good.
I must admit, I have never had a sunburn on my feet before, but that doesn't sound very appealing.
Yeah. So I was down for like 2 days.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I went back out to the beach. So like, fuck, I'm gonna go to the beach. Like, I'm gonna ride in the waves. I'm gonna, you know, jump into the earth's life stream, the blood, right, and feel the pulse, you know, have the moon do its work on my body and all that. Just kind of like, yeah, sand and that, riding the waves, doing all that, but fuck, my feet just hurt so bad. Oh. Even still. Yeah. I'm happy to be back. Not working is more stressful than working. So how about you two? Any anecdotes over the past week?
Ben, do you have adventure stories?
I went to a coworker's birthday party and we watched The Big Lebowski in a pool drinking White Russian, so that was fun. Yeah.
Well, that sounds better than my birthday's gonna be. I'm just gonna be tomorrow. as we record this. Yeah, thank you, but it's closing for my company, and I have to work all day, and then I have to run errands for art commission stuff on my lunch break, and then I have double belly dance class. And then also my parents aren't home, so I'm alone. So yeah. I have a miserable, stressful birthday coming up tomorrow. Yeah. But that's okay, because this weekend is Classic Games Fest and like my family reunion and a bunch of other crap. So
yeah,
I have plenty of opportunity to be drunk and tired. So
yeah, this weekend is going to be it'll be your birthday observed.
Yeah, there you go. Pretty much. Like the last couple of days, I've been, because I'm training for a marathon, and the last couple of days I have been mad because I'm so busy. I am mad that I have to wake up at like, you know, ridiculous o'clock to run in the dark. And so I ended up making 2 new personal records for myself for 5K and 10K, like back to back the last 2 days, because I was just so pissed. I was just like, oh, I'm going to fuck you up training. I hate you. So that was... That's been me for the last couple of days.
Fueled by anger.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I'm hoping I can vent all the rage and stuff, so this weekend I can just be like, I'm good. What's up, everybody? I'm cool.
And then, you know, beer.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, man. How about you, Ben?
Outside of the Big Lebowski party, not much, man. Just been taking it easy.
Cool. Yeah, being the person that I ship stickers and stuff to. Feel free to crack into those and get them. Get one or two.
Get them.
Yeah, get them. Get them.
Fingers are feeling a little bit light. Yeah. No.
Yeah. So I think that we've achieved a requisite level of banter here. Of note, anybody who's listening to this, if you're in the Austin area, it's still not too late to come out to the Classic Game Fest in downtown Austin. You can check duckfeed.tv/austin-2016. Gary and I are doing a live performance of Watch Out for Fireballs about Punch Out on Sunday morning, and we would love to see you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. It's gonna be great to hang out with all of you. It'll be a nice little kind of like mini Portland kind of thing.
It'll be like this, but with visuals.
I know, right?
Well, you know, I've already seen Ben's old hat, but like I get to see you and Gary anyway, and then like Jeremy and various other listeners.
Yeah, Jeremy, Dr. Static, yeah.
Your peoples.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. I can safely say there has never been a Duck Feed event gathering that has been a bad time. Yeah, so we've got the usual kind of show for you. I'm going to warn you, it's going to be a little bit briefer tonight because of the aforementioned kind of busyness stuff. But we want to give you the usual, the brief, the multiplayer and the grind. And we're going to start out with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, you have two stories, don't you?
I do. Okay, so the first one is actually a follow-up to a story from earlier in the spring. I had mentioned before that GameStop was jumping into the publishing business. And so listener Steven played and reviewed Song of the Deep, which is the first game released by the publishing wing of GameStop, that is. And review is published on Dark Insight, which is Jeremy Greer's thing that he does. So yeah. Anyway, lots of listeners and hosts and things in there. But I was really happy to read it because I felt previously as though I should probably follow up on Song of the Deep and maybe play it or something so I can, you know, say, hey guys, so I played that game that was published by GameStop and, you know, well, now I don't have to do that because he did it. So that's cool.
Can you give me a summary of what this is? Because I saw Jeremy Parrish tweeting about like, oh, this is like a must purchase for me. But when I look at it, it kind of looks like a regular side-scrolling exploration shooter kind of thing.
That's pretty much what it is. There are puzzly type elements, but some of it is just kind of vexing. From Steven's review, it seems like it looks good and it starts out pretty well, but then it just kind of overstays its welcome.
Okay.
And, you know, just kind of gets, you know, vexing towards the latter half, like some of the puzzles are samey or more difficult than they should be or something like that. So, and then just kind of too repetitive as it goes. So, but anyway, so I'm glad that I didn't have to play it to know that because we don't need me to flip any more tables this week. So,
yeah.
You know, like I'm turning into the Flash slowly but surely.
You mean okay, the Hulk? It might shave more time off your running records, though.
Yeah. Right? Well, anyway, so... Okay, so that was number one. I just wanted to advise that there is a bit of a follow-up on Song of the Deep, which was that GameStop game. And, yeah, that was pretty much the summary. So the other thing I came across was an article that's awesome about video games as sex ed! Yay! So this I found an article that has five different games about sex that are the point of the games is to trigger realizations, and this is from the article, and discussions about how sex makes humans feel. Basically, whereas most video games are like, here's boobies or whatever, like these are meant to be more pro-sex rather than pro-masturbation, like, you know, like instead of something to whack off to, these are things that are more, involved in, you know, not just like the starter, the trigger of, you know, what gets you there, but then like the getting there, you know? So anyway, the games that were mentioned were The Realistic Kissing Simulator, which is pretty much exactly what that sounds like.
I'm imagining another one... controls like Surgeon Simulator right now with this. Is that at all on point? Or
it honestly, if you click on the article and you take a look at it, like they are these crazy looking weird faces with weirdo lips. And like I can imagine that this game probably has like a lot of, you know, tactical placement of the tongue kind of thing and like the lips, like it probably gets really, really funny as you play this type of thing. So it looks really, really ridiculous, but it's kind of awesome.
it's a two-player game, like you play it with somebody else, and it's kind of like a 2D thing. It is not, as I expected, a playable version of that 3D rendering of the way George Michael from Arrested Development kisses. What else is there, Joel?
There's Consenticle, which is a card-based game where players work to seek satisfaction points in a romantic encounter without using words. So this is all body language, gestures, actions. And the name comes from a tentacled alien, which is one of the characters, and the other is a human being. So... okay. Apparently this was covered on Kotaku and some other stuff like that, and it's gotten a lot of people wanting to play test it, and it's going to be part of IndieCade in October. So I mean, like, this is you know, been in development for a bit, and is a little bit, it's not just like a you know, like the kissing simulator one, which is kind of like some one person made this game and it's over there in a corner. You know, this one's a little bit more publicized. So the next one is called Cobra Club, and all it is a dick pic photo taking simulator where it's just that's it.
I'm imagining Pokemon Go on top of that.
It's Pokemon Snap where everything's a dicklet.
That's awesome. Well, the thing is that if you actually go and look at the Cobra Club on you know, like itch.io, like this guy's other games are pretty wow. Pretty wow too. They are all kind of in the same vein, and they're all very short games about, you know, male sexuality. So anyway,
you don't want to do that on your work computer.
No, not at all. So, okay, there's two more, and these are not quite sexy or trying to be sexy so much. Striptease, which is a pixelated game with a sex worker named Candy, whose body is then broken into different parts. And the point of the game is basically to be an examination of how women's bodies are treated as commodities, which I think is kind of an interesting concept behind it. I don't know how well executed it is. Like, I don't know if this is like, now you have to put her back together again. Like, I don't know how the game plays whatsoever, but, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah. And it looks like a different version of like a 16s puzzle or a 15 puzzle, like a tile sliding thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I figured. And then the last one is called Triad, which is basically like Tetris, but the objective is just to get three people and a cat to fit comfortably on a bed. There is no mention of why they're all on a bed, what they did beforehand, whatever, so it's not necessarily sex, it's just three people and a cat on a bed.
Maybe they couldn't afford an extra hotel room.
Yeah, like they just cram everybody in on one bed, it's no big deal. And I don't know where the cat came from if we're in a hotel. I guess that could be like, you know, emotional.
That could be an Airbnb.
There you go. Anyway,
I put a link to this in the show notes. This is a good article that has a lot of links and stuff where people can find them.
Yeah, some of these are pretty cool. I mean, I know I'm also the same person who brought up the genital jousting game with the really weird worm dick people or whatever. Like, I have a tendency of bringing up these weird ass games, but like some of these are actually kind of cool. So they, I would definitely recommend at least like looking at the article anyway.
Ben, how about you? What kind of story you got?
All right, so I got two articles about No Man's Sky that came out this week. One of which is that the PC version of the game is delayed by 3 days. So
unconscionable.
I know. Outrage. The PlayStation 4 is coming out August 9th, and the PC one's coming out August 12th. In addition, they already wrapped up programming on the game earlier this month, so it is actually done. So there probably won't be any more delays beyond this. And then the other significant piece of news is that you don't need to have PlayStation Plus in order to play the full game. So even though there's a lot of components to it that are online when you're like building the universe, you can play that single player as long as you have internet connection. You don't need to have PlayStation Plus in order to play it. So
oh, good. So it just pulls down the world that everybody makes. You're not like flying around with them.
In addition, cool. whatever you contribute to will also get pushed. So
Cool.
I guess that's pretty confident on their end that you're not going to run into another person then too. But, I don't.
Yeah. So is this still a game that you're really kind of like jazzed about?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm probably going to pick it up. There's definitely a lot of buzz around it. I mean, if nothing else, it seems like a very unique experience. So I'll probably be an early adopter of it. And it seems like because of those two pieces of information, I'll probably get on PS4, but we'll see. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let me know, A, how you like it, and B, what kind of game it is.
Yeah. I'm eager to find that out as well. So, yeah.
Cool. And then I've got a final one here. This is actually not a very new story. It's something that happened last week while we were sleeping. This is that Nintendo has announced the release, or it's planned to release, this miniature NES box thing. So it's called the Nintendo Classic Edition or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's a little like HDMI box that you can plug a special NES style controller into. Like it looks like it has a plug that is like a Wii remote accessory kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it comes loaded with 30 really great games. There's not really a stinker in them. I'm looking forward to at least like 7 of them, but there's like Dr. Mario, Excitebike, Castlevania, Mega Man 2, all of the Marios, or at least like Mario 1, 2, and 3, the first two Zeldas. And it's going to be like $60 and it's going to come out on like November 11th or something like that. I'm kind of bummed out that it's not coming out sooner because one of these games is the game that we're going to be covering at PRGE. And this would have been a fantastic way to avoid having to buy that game. I don't know. I think this is kind of cool. And obviously, you look at comments or you listen to other people talk about this and they say, I could do the same thing with a Raspberry Pi, but I want a little NES.
Right? It's cute.
Yeah. And especially just the fact that this is going to go through HDMI is a pretty big deal. And also like getting a second controller and just like, yeah, we're gonna play some head-to-head Dr. Mario. It's gonna be great. Yeah. What do you guys think of this? Like, am I crazy for being like jazzed about it?
No, it's cute. Actually, when you were on vacation, I had posted the link to Slack somewhere. So I had seen it and I was like, oh, that's neato. And then it generated a conversation about the thing.
How about you, Ben?
I agree. I think it looks cute. I don't know if I'd be interested in playing any of the games, but I don't know.
Yeah, I have to actually like look through the list of games again because I don't remember what all was in there.
Yeah, it's got like Star Tropics and Super C and Punch Out. Like, I don't know, like cool. Pretty good stuff. Yeah, the only bummer that I've heard about it is like if you look at the like there's an FAQ, the cord on the controller is really short. Which is a little bit of a bummer, but
they really stuck with the miniature theme,
I suppose.
They're committed.
Well, there's a side by side shot. The controller is roughly the same size as the original NES controller, which is good because I love that controller's design, despite how uncomfortable it is. Yeah.
Well, if they made it very much smaller, then people in America would be like unable to push the buttons, you know? Like most Americans have very large hands.
Give me the Xbox, the original Xbox controller. I'm a big dumb oaf.
That's not what I'm meaning.
No, I was just saying, I was confessing to you guys, I'm a big dumb oaf.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer where we ask you a question and you answer it. Jala, This is your question that you posted for the listeners. What did you ask the nice people?
Well, I asked, or rather, listener Michael did. Thank Ooh. You for the suggestion. Most games have either great gameplay, narration, or atmosphere. Which of these elements motivates you the most, and which game exemplifies this best for you?
Yeah, and I'm going to start us out with Steven, who says, Doom 2016 absolutely nails gameplay and manages to make a simple gameplay loop satisfying to play over and over again. Naughty Dog has incredible pacing and writing with Uncharted 4. And as far as atmosphere goes, Bloodborne still reigns king in my mind.
He didn't actually answer, like, which one of those he likes best. He's just like, all the things.
He likes the ball. Yeah. Here's
an example. He just... we asked him, like, hey, what salary do you think is appropriate? He just, like, shoved a whole pile of paper across, like, no, it's supposed to be like a small little piece of paper, and then I write my counteroffer.
No. He made a comment. He realized, and he made a comment, and it says, as for motivation, a good or interesting story is what keeps me going above all else in a game. Okay, he did finish his thought there.
Yeah.
Okay. You are acceptable.
Ben, what does Chase say?
Chase says, forms of transportation are always a big motivator for me. Super speed in Saints Row 4, flying mounts in World of Warcraft, and gaining mastery over the free running in Assassin's Creed games have all done a lot to hold my interest when it otherwise may have been lost.
Yeah. So that is that is one for gameplay. I would put motility in gameplay.
Yeah. I had given Chase some crap about that, and I was like, good job picking something that wasn't on the list, although I think that, you know, mode of transport is a gameplay aspect.
Sure. And there are whole games that are, you know, about that.
Yep.
Like, there's that grappling hook game, but God, I needed to, like, get that and play it.
I mentioned Dishonored, because Dishonored's all about the blinky blinky, and I had even stated that when I was playing that game, that was like one of the main things that made the gameplay for me in that particular game was the traversal. Yeah. So
God, I'm thirsty for Dishonored 2.
Oh
man.
I'm outnumbered here, so I will keep silent.
Good call.
Jala, since I'm hulking out this week, you don't want to get me mad, Ben. Okay. Roop says, narration and atmosphere combined. I really like the first Gabriel Knight. It really gives you the New Orleans feel, and the occasional narration by the voodoo lady ties it all together.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, and this is vague, it's mostly unrelated. You guys see Miss Cleo died?
I did not. Oh.
Yeah, was, you know, like every once in a while I will pull open my phone and I will swipe to the left and look at my news alert, and it's like, hey, she didn't, you know how old she was when she, like now she was like 53. That seems really young, right?
It does.
Yeah. See, I don't have to go swipe for the news stories, because I just look at the Slack and somebody else posts it, and then I see it. And I don't really comment in a lot of the channels, but I see you.
Yes.
The all-seeing Jala.
Yeah. No, man, the first Gabriel Knight is so good. I'm due to at least dip back into that a little bit.
I have never played it before, so I can't say anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost always on sale on Jodj, so.
Cool.
Yeah. Ollie says, I will put up with mediocre gameplay if the atmosphere is right. If I have to pick one game to represent this, Psychonauts. Some of the gameplay is a little janky, but everything else works together to make a fantastic atmosphere. Graphical style, sound effects, soundtrack, and story. It means that no matter how frustrated I sometimes get with the controls, I keep going back for more.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, what she just described is like you made yourself very fertile soil for Psychonauts to find purchase. Yeah, I'm there too. Ben, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, the most important thing for me is the gameplay, with atmosphere being a close second. Majora's Mask is a great example of a game like this. It combines surreal, melancholy atmosphere with some really nice dungeon design and fun gameplay wrinkles from the mask transformations.
Yeah. Majora's Mask does rest very nicely on that right there. I think that our priorities are a little bit flipped, Jonathan. Man, that's weird. I almost never directly address somebody. Huh. I think our priorities are a little bit flipped. I still like that game for many of the same reasons, even though the atmosphere makes up for my kind of growing disdain for the 3D Zelda kind of formula.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jala, what does Derek say?
Derek says atmosphere is the most important for me. This is interesting. I think he's the first one to say that, right? Okay, so great mechanics are easily found in any number of games, video, tabletop, or sports alike. Great narratives have existed for literally thousands of years. I'll gladly play games on their lowest difficulty. I may forget certain character traits or story beats over time, but I'll never forget the feeling of games that left me with a real sense of place. We love Bioshock because of Rapture. We love RE1 because of The Mansion. We love Silent Hill because of, well, Silent Hill. Each of these games has plenty else to offer, but my memories of them are first and foremost their settings and the way being in those environments felt. Awesome.
Well said.
Rock on. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that I could add anything more to that.
Yep.
Yeah. Sam writes, it took until The Witcher 3 for me to get hooked on that franchise because it's the first game in the series where the gameplay caught up with the atmosphere and story. A game can get by on atmosphere and or story, but gameplay is still the number one draw for me.
See, I've got to agree at least with Sam on The Witcher, just because I played some of the first Witcher and I just, I can't even. So, like, you know, I may need to eventually get Witcher 3 and try that out. So we'll see.
Yeah, I am perpetually just right on the edge of saying, fuck it, I'm going to put it in and just play it on the stationary bike. But still nothing. Let's see here. Who read that? Was that me?
Yeah.
Okay. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I'm a gameplay guy. For me, light plot or design in games is okay. I love a great combat system. Destiny, Diablo 3, and Prototype 2 come to mind. One example really shines to me, Metal Gear Solid Revengeance. Over-the-top, crazy fast, and robot ninjas. Sign me up for that time and again.
Yeah.
So can I go ahead and throw in kind of a dissenting thing here? I would say, sure. That, you know, it's a platinum game. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance is one of the best character action games I've ever played. As a counterpoint, I would say a lot of what really makes that such a memorable game is the atmosphere. I would say the crazy fast robot ninjas and just the wacky stuff actually is just kind of like an ambient thing about the setting and the creative choices that Platinum and, you know, whoever from Kojima's team was involved kind of made. I think that they work really well in tandem with each other. I don't know.
I wish he was on the podcast. And yeah, then you guys could find it out.
Michael, I will await your rebuttal and we will sit silently until I get it.
So there.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Jala, what does David say?
David says, gameplay. I tend to like longer games, and if I'm going to spend 60 plus hours playing a game, I want to enjoy that time. Thanks for giving us an example, David. No. Anyway, I'm pretty sure he'll say, like, because he's Mr. Wowie. He has played the Wowie,
yeah.
And he has played lots of the Final Fantasies and mm-hmm. the things like that. So,
yeah,
those long ass games that never end.
That he plays because he enjoys them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Eric writes, gameplay with a tinge of atmosphere. The new Doom proves that it's the gameplay that people were itching for most, rather than the deep atmosphere that Doom 3 provides. But at the same time, it's tough to really say the new Doom lacks atmosphere. Their direction is really stellar, and the Mars sequences and hell areas are really well-designed aesthetically. Narration, not really high on my list, but sometimes it can make a huge impact. See Bastion and Battleblock Theater. Oh, so he's talking about literal narration, like a voiceover artist.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, huh, okay.
Cool. Yeah, well, I mean, Bastion benefits so much from the soundtrack too.
In Battleblock Theater, oh my god, that the narration made it very, very cute, like cuter than the game itself was. So I have to admit that I was just kind of like squeeing the first time I was co-oping that with people.
Well, that's a very cute game too. I mean, Behemoth, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's Steam that made that, right?
I guess. I don't know.
The people who did like Castle Crashers and Alien Hobbit.
Yeah, those people.
Yeah, there we go. Ben, what does Graham say?
Graham says, I'm having trouble picking between the three because what I get out of games is usually a mix of the three categories. I like to be immersed in a whole world and story, but I love when gameplay elements and challenge enhance the narrative or atmosphere of a game. In fact, I don't usually like purely narrative games like walking simulators or heavily narrative games with problematic gameplay mechanics like old-school point-and-click adventures. Unfortunately, the best example of this mix is Dark Souls. Sorry to cliche on you guys.
Yeah, it had to happen at least once.
Yeah, but Doom's got two votes so far. The new one. So.
Yeah, that's let's see what kind of staying power that has. I think what needs to happen as the copy of Doom makes its way around all of us, we just need to keep it going, and as more people find it, basically think of it like a speedboat. We've got to break the plane, and then it will just never sink back down. Yeah, Jala, what does Chris say?
Chris says, I like a good combo of narration and atmosphere. I can play any game with terrible garbage gameplay if it has a good story and cool world building. A favorite is Planescape Torment. Yay! Okay, which is pretty garbage in combat, but wow, that story and setting. And currently I'm really been digging Leviathan, The Last Day of the Decade. Yeah! Which mixes a cool murder investigation and some great world building. Hell of a lot of fun. Basically, adventure games, visual novels, and 800-hour story-based RPGs is where I'm at nowadays. Yeah, I must admit, he's been posting a lot of his commentary about Leviathan as he's been playing it with, like, you know, coupled it with screenshots and things like that. And it has been so fun for me because, of course, I was the first person of the Duckfeed people to play that game. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I went through it a bunch of times, and then I got involved in the making of it. And so, you know, like, I'm really deep into it now, but, you know, like, to see somebody else seeing it with fresh eyes and playing it for the first time is really a lot of fun. And then all of his commentary is hilarious. So I'm just like, ha, ha, ha. Just you wait until the next part, ha, ha, ha. You know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So
you wouldn't warn him if you could, because you wouldn't take that away.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I will round us out here with Tim, who says, gameplay. If it's narration, then why not just watch a movie? One that has all three are the Left 4 Dead games that are super fun to play and tell you a story that only a game that only a video game could tell you through its atmosphere and loads of randomly occurring dialogue. All of this is only possible through its fun co-op twist on the FPS.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think Valve does a really good job at this. I mean...
Oh yeah,
you know, Portal, Half Life,
sure. Portal,
like,
yeah,
a good, you mm-hmm. know, fantastic mixture at that. Like, not just Left 4 Dead. Yeah, so there's something in me that kind of like chafes at the why not just watch a movie kind of side of it, because I want to say, oh, it's more complicated than that. But, like, you know, I'm also a person who will play a visual novel, but most of the ones I play are more like adventure games. They have stuff on top mm-hmm. of them and things like that. Like, it just, it's something that, like, I have an immediate visceral reaction to that. I don't know. I don't know if it feels a little simplistic. Like, no, but I can't actually, like, articulate why.
Well, here, one thing that, when I was in a comics course a few years back, one of the things that was mentioned during this course was why a lot of the people who, enjoyed Watchmen, totally hated the movie, and there's various reasons for that. But one of the reasons that, insofar as the narration and the actual medium itself is concerned, you know, one of the main differences is that with a comic, it's an active process because you control the flow of the story. You can skip back if you want to skip back. You can peek ahead if you want to, because it's in a book format, and you decide how long you stare at each panel, what's going, you know, that kind of a thing. Whereas with a movie, it's completely backseat, and all you're doing is observing, and things flash on the screen, and you're just staring at the screen, and that's the end of that. And that same kind of principle can be applied here when it comes to visual novels, walking simulators, although in video games, again, it's a slightly different medium, so there's a little bit of interaction going on. Even if the visual novel kind of funnels you to the same place, you still make choices of how you want the dialogue to go, or what you do next, or what have you. And so that, you know, still is a different experience. It's a, you know, a different kind of a thing than just watching a movie. So, you know, like I would definitely say it is different, but probably not different enough for him in particular. You mm-hmm. know, like he doesn't want that from his games. That's not what he's in the games for. So, you know, like that's, you know, and then that's fine. Everybody has their preferences, but you know, it's just a discussion of the medium. And like I said, I mean, comic versus movie versus book versus game, you know, they all function differently. So, you know, sometimes one or the other can be better for that particular story or that particular message that's trying to be conveyed. So.
Yeah. And, you know, it's media theory, hot or cold medium, mm-hmm. lean forward, lean back, kind of stuff like that. I think that, I think that I know this is not what Tim is saying, but when I see that, and you know, we'll talk about our own values here. When I see that, like that is almost always kind of used to like downplay the importance of either of the two. Either of the other two, if you know, if we're gonna see it as a triangle, that's kind of a zero sum game kind of thing. When in reality, I think that, you know, the way that comes across, I know it's not what he's trying to say. It comes across almost as like a if not a brother, at least a cousin to the well, that's not a game kind of thing. And that's mm-hmm. my problem because that's what I'm receiving when he puts that out.
Mm.
I don't know. Let's that's the end of those. I want to go through us and talk about our own Jala. How about you? So start us off while I cool down from my rage there.
Okay, so it's interesting. When I was considering it, I play a, you know, as everybody knows, I play a whole hell of a lot of different types of games, and so what I look for in a game or what I enjoy in a game really varies because I have such a broad range of things that I play. When it comes to pure gameplay, I enjoy games that are just about the gameplay, really. Like Resident Evil 6, that has some parts that have some kind of an atmosphere or some, it has a ridiculous fucking narrative, but it is really, really fun to co-op. And I just, as I'll talk about a little bit more, I've been streaming it with Sam Bear. We finished Resident Evil 5 and now we started streaming Resident Evil 6. And it's his first time playing this, and it's been months since the last time I played, you know, RE6, so I'm getting back into it. And after playing 5, man, you know, like 6 is so much more fun. And so anyway, another instance of gameplay is Dishonored for me, which I mentioned that previously. That one, I would say, is kind of an interesting mixture. Like, I don't really care about the narrative in Dishonored so much, to be honest. I like the atmosphere and the gameplay pretty well, you know, evenly. Although the gameplay is a little bit stronger, you know, in its favor, like, to make me want to replay that or continue playing the series. The gameplay, above all else, is really what makes me want to play that more.
Yeah.
But, and so far as narration, I find that most of the time, the types of narrative games that I enjoy are the ones that also have a strong sense of place, you know, like a strong atmosphere to them, such as Leviathan. That was going to be my pick for a good example of that, just because the world itself is as much a character as any of the autonomous beings in the game. Mm-hmm. And I really want to learn more about the world of Leviathan. And so, you know, like that has a very strong sense of place, a very good narrative, you know, and those elements are what drew me into, you know, everything about Lostwood. So,
yeah.
Yep.
I don't have anything to add. Ben, I want to hear from you.
So, yeah, I think atmosphere is probably going to be the biggest one for me because, so, like, all the games that I really, really love are ones with, like, a strong sense of atmosphere. Like, the ones that come to mind are, like, Arkham Asylum, Shadow of the Colossus, Knights of the Old Republic. Like, everything has a very, like, almost, like, gorgeous, like, space, and usually something that's, or, like, with The Last of Us, something where it's, you know, a space that's very foreign from yourself, so it's a lot of, there's a lot of fun in figuring out, like, the rules of the area that you're in. Between gameplay mechanics and narrative, probably it kind of varies game to game. Like, for example, with Alpha Protocol, that's one where the gameplay mechanics don't really matter. It's still a really fun game. But then, like, if you look at something with Shadow of the Colossus, the gameplay is, like, central to the enjoyment of the game. And the narrative, you know, it's there and it's good, but, you know, it's not as critical, perhaps. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious about, so you mentioned KOTOR in like the atmosphere side of that. Is that just because it is so steeped in Star Wars and you're kind of a big fan of that, or is there something else, you know, that KOTOR specific, you know, something specific to KOTOR, you know, that trips that for you?
Yeah. And so I think something of it has to do with like graphics at the time too. Cause like, I remember when that game came out, like, you know, going to like Tatooine or going to like Manon or something, those were like pretty new worlds, or those were pretty new experiences in terms of gameplay where, you know, like, I guess there are things like Myst where, you know, like you kind of go to places that are, you know, like perhaps even look better than Knights of the Republic when that came out. But for its time, it seems like that was something where that felt like a brand new experience, like just being able to fly to like completely different worlds and experience like the culture of those areas. So, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I do have to say too that insofar as something with atmosphere is concerned, like I was thinking about it, and with Elder Scrolls, I didn't really like. I played Oblivion and Skyrim, but really Morrowind's, you know, place setting and the feel of just jumping into that game for the first time really is what drew me into the Elder Scrolls at all in the first place. And so the gameplay, though, you know, does not age well whatsoever. And the narrative, I really didn't give a crap about. I didn't pay attention to the main storyline like at all. So, you know, insofar as that game is concerned, like I was only there for the world. So, you know, and I didn't have that similar experience with Oblivion or with Skyrim because I just didn't care about those settings as much, you know. So, I mean, yeah, I played them. They had better mechanics, but you know, overall, they didn't hold up to me the same way that I have the same, you know, these fond memories of when I first played Morrowind. I'm not going to go back and play it now because it's really difficult to go back to. But
do you want European fantasy or Northern European fantasy?
Yeah,
choose
like,
wisely.
Yeah, I was so mad. You don't even want to know about how many tables I flipped at that point.
Do you have somebody that, do you just have one table that, or one table that you've got somebody to like flip it back
up?
No, I
like line them up in the backyard and I just go around the backyard flipping tables everywhere.
It's kind of like some people play flip cup, you play flip table.
I imagine
and then like there's increasing.
And you just flip it in 360 degrees and so that you can flip it again later. Yeah.
Right? Well, and then, you know, because I have to, you know, up the ante, I have to put like different degrees of weight, like in, you know, like attach it to the table so that way every time I flip it, it gets harder to do.
Someone who's really skilled in Unity, work with Jala to make table dismount. It's like a little physics game. Like what I want is like an iPad version where I can, you know, just flick across the screen and
or
get
flip
points.
Your iPad.
Right?
I'll do mine, and I've got citations. So narrative isn't it for me. I think that specifically narrative in games, the highest purpose that it can serve, that actually is in service to the experience of playing it, is actually giving you the motivation for what to do next. And that isn't my own thought. That's something that like Justin McElroy on the Joystick Podcast said like 7 years ago. that really kind of stuck out to me. It's like, yeah, you know, something can have a really intricate, tangled plot, but if you look at again another thing that not a thought of my own, but something that resonated, something like Stephen King said, like I don't trust plot. You know, something like however intricately plotted something is, like that's something that kind of you can appreciate a little bit in the moment, but mostly it's there for the author to feel really good about, and also to be appreciated like later on afterwards, and you know, pieced together, put together, that kind of thing. I think that any of that in vacuum and any kind of media without atmosphere to make you feel something with it is effectively useless. And kind of comes down to that usual kind of like trope of I need to sit down and make the Bible for the world before I ever sit down and actually like write a character. And then you get something that feels like really stiff and broken, which isn't to say that a game can't have a really good story. Like you look at something like Rule of Rose, which has an amazing story, and the way that it puts it together, or in most cases doesn't put it together, is really fascinating in hindsight. But like without that atmosphere in the moment, like it wouldn't be anything. You know, without just the revulsion and just kind of like alienness that it makes you feel. And obviously I like horror games, so I'm going to say atmosphere. And you know, gameplay obviously is in service to that. I think it's like a symbiosis, but like something that really unlocked this for me and really like made me settle in. Zach on Video Games Hot Dog, back around the time that like Kentucky Route Zero Episode 2 came out, and they did that game, or what was released so far, as an assignment, he said, like, yeah, you know, games are really good at doing mood, really good at doing mood and atmosphere, and a lot of other stuff, you know, is kind of secondary to that. And that, and he was like, yes, you know, preach it. Preach it, please. So yeah, atmosphere all the way, with those people backing me up on it, or at least, you know, having that resonance. It's hard to say like what my favorite example is. Let's just go with Rule of Rose. That's something I've played very recently, that does have a tremendous atmosphere that kind of redeemed that experience for me, in light of gameplay that on the balance wasn't as bad as I expected it to be, but there were moments where it was just a pit. You know, atmosphere all the way.
Awesome.
Do you think atmosphere degrades over time? It's a hypothetical question.
Do you like as like visuals and stuff ages, or maybe? I don't know that we're at that point. I think that I don't know that it degrades, or if it just your relationship with it changes. Mm-hmm. I would still say that like the original Resident Evil is an incredibly scary and frightening game because of a lot of the decisions that they made. You know, and I would even say the same thing about like Silent Hill, with the original one. Like that is a, you know, incredibly dated game. It's a bunch of Doritos fighting each other in a foggy room, you know, and you can't see the walls. But I think that it starts to become more of its time, and I think that the best examples of it, regardless of that, will still kind of like stick up and you know, be effective.
Okay.
Yeah. Speaking specifically about horror, like that, because that's just what I know. I'm sure there are plenty of other examples that, that, you know, don't.
You have a long list of games that you've played that are kind of like retro games, it seems, since you have multiple podcasts relating to those. So.
Yeah. You know, just like you look at like these really, you know, so like Super Metroid, that game is atmospheric as fuck. And you can say like, oh, obviously like that is a paragon of 16-bit game design. So obviously it is going to break through, and there are any number of things that will not, you know, stick out. And I think that maybe what makes that game timeless and what makes everything kind of hold together is the fact that it is a pretty good balance of all three, you know, again, if we're treating this as a triumvirate, but yeah, I would say, it doesn't degrade. I think that it changes, but I don't know that I feel confident saying like the overall quality takes a dive.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking at the waveform here. I talked for a very long time. But thank you everybody for responding, for writing in. Thank you Michael for suggesting this this question. Thank you Jala for posting it. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and these go up on Tuesday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Let's see. Do we have any volunteers for who wants to go first?
We have a common game, Cole, but I don't know what order that should go in, but.
Okay. I think we should probably do that one at the end.
Okay.
Jala, that makes you by default.
The one. Okay. Well, I mentioned earlier that I've been streaming Resident Evil 5 and Resident Evil 6 with Sam. We are currently just through Chapter 2 of Leon and Helena's campaign. We still need to go back and do RE5's DLC, but interestingly, that, like I said before, like that game didn't really kind of like hold up to the memory I had of it, and I think it's because I played that game before 6 came out, and I have not played 5 since 6 came out. And so, like, to go back and play 5 now is just kind of like, ugh, this one's not as fun as 6.
It's so stiff.
It seemed so much more fun in its time, and it didn't age well when I played 6 because 6 is so much smoother. So I'm like, wow. And Sam, it wasn't just me. Sam played 5 for the first time with me and played 6 for the first time with me and is playing 6 for the first time with me. And he basically said the same thing. He's like, wow. Yeah, the end of 5 was just rough. And then, like, now 6 is so much better. I kind of don't want to go back and play the DLC for 5 yet, you know? And I'm like, okay, I can totally understand wanting to recover from from the end of that game before going back to the DLC. So we will play the DLC sometime. And in the meantime, we will probably continue playing RE6. So that is what I am streaming right now, just because, you know, Sam is playing it for the first time. And I am the Sherpa for that game. So
do you know what the DLC involves for Resident Evil 5?
Oh, I actually don't know, because the DLC wasn't around, or I just didn't play it. I don't know what the hell happened anyway. I have never seen it, so I don't know.
Okay.
The one that I'm aware of is you are going through another mansion that is it was designed by one of the Trevors. So it's like the mansion from RE1. I think it's the mission where Jill gets taken out, where Chris thinks that Jill has died. So it is, instead of being Chris and Sheva, is that who it is?
Sheva? Yeah.
Instead of being Chris and Sheva, it's Chris and Jill.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
It also has some, like, nemesis kind of features to it too. Like, there's one persistent guy who keeps coming after you. Apparently it's really good, but I, again, kind of like Sam and Ujala, I don't know that I would be willing to brave RE5's play. It's weird, right? Because, like, the stiffness in 4 doesn't really feel like that much of an issue. I've played...
It doesn't, and it's real weird how it's kind of like 4 still, like, I can go back and play that game and not have a problem playing that game. I went back and played 5, and I actually really was just like, you know, like, the first, I don't know, half of it or so was pretty good. Like, I could still deal with that, but then the later half, man, it was just dumpy. And
is it asking you to do?
I think part of it is just because it turns into a corridor shooter type, and then, you know,
I mean, 4 does too. Like, when you get to the military island.
Yeah. It does. Well, then again, maybe it's because I, like, when I replay 4, I only, like, I fizzle out before that part. Just, like, I'm done. Like,
yes, because 4 is 1.5 times too long.
As everyone on the network already says, that game is too long. Yeah, pretty much. Like, I think it's just because I do agree with that, and I just kind of, like, stop playing before I get that far. So
I will say the best atmosphere is when it's at the mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, but anyway,
the mansion, when is that?
The middle part of the game?
The castle?
The castle.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, the castle.
Yeah, with the big Robo Salazar. Oh, yeah. Yep. That's the best atmosphere ever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Continue.
Okay, so that's what I've been streaming. The other thing I've been playing, because I've been damn busy, has been Virtue's Last Reward. So I will say just a few things, because I don't have a whole hell of a lot to say for reasons, and I might flip a table. All right. I have not come across any new endings, even though I put a bunch of more hours into it. And that's because I keep on running into this whole to be continued bullshit, which is really not a great mechanic for indicating what needs to happen and when or where. So it's really frustrating. It's irritating as fuck. And, so that's a thing. Like, I have only seen one actual ending, Dio's ending, and then I've gotten some bad endings, like 3 bad endings, I want to say, and then a bunch of to-be-continueds that I'm still dealing with. So that's frustrating, because now that I have a bunch of little, hey, wait, you have to pick this up later bits, I'm not going to remember what the fuck was going on in each one of these to differentiate which path was what, you know, like, overall. So, like, I'm mad about that.
Use the notes. One of my favorite mechanics, or, like, little wrinkles in that, is when you write yourself a note, as you jump, the notes deteriorate. Like, they will slowly start being erased in a random pattern.
But I should not have to use the notes to remember what the fuck's going on in the game.
Okay. So that is an area where I'm a hypocrite because I just talked about like, oh, I don't trust plot. I like how delicate and intricate the VLR plot is. It's been a long time since I played it, so I can't intuit exactly what you're like what things are being, you know, triggering your frustration, because I don't remember a lot of specifics right now off the top of my head.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, and it's kind of like, okay, I'll get up to a puzzle, and then like I have, you know, obviously like the puzzle ones aren't so bad because it's like, okay, stuck in room with this person or whatever, but like I don't remember all the conditions about who was where, did this person die, did this happen, was that this timeline or some other timeline? And I guess that might be the point of it, is that you're supposed to not fucking know what's going on. So that maybe it's just because that's just how the story itself is being told is meant to be, like a confused muddle of bullshit. But
I mean, I was with you up until you said bullshit. But the fact that you are kind of like jumping around to these different continuities and timelines, like really all that you need to know is like once you are in a timeline, you're committed and it only flows one direction. It's just, you know, when you reach the end of it, you pick another one and go until that one is done. So you are, you know, meant to be like, okay, wait a second, reorienting yourself as you jump from one to the other. Like that is a feature, not a bug.
Well, I wouldn't really mind that, except for the fact that, like I was saying, I mean, like, I'm not going to remember which timeline was what and where I was going with each particular case. Like, I'm getting interested in what's going on in this particular playthrough, this particular path that I'm on. And then suddenly that path deviates and is like, sorry, you can't play this until you finish, like, everything else. Then by the time I get back to that, like all the steam has run out of that particular path, and I don't know what even was going on anymore in that particular path because of all the other stuff I had to stop and go do before I could get back to it. You know, like according to how long I've been playing this versus the overall, you know, time to complete, I'm about halfway through with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I just feel like I have hit, you know, three or four of these in a row. Now, like, if I was only hitting, like, one or two and then I got somewhere, then mm-hmm. I wouldn't be so frustrated. But I have hit, like, fucking four of them in a row and I'm just mad. I'm like, can I fucking finish something? I'm mad about this. Like, seriously, can I just finish mm-hmm. something?
Yeah. You know? So, like, that is a bad design. I can't remember too many of those just kind of, like, to-be-continued roadblocks, but they're there. And the fact that by picking at random, by just kind of like saying, okay, I want to go here and like this seems like a good way, like, you know, the fact that they're there and the fact that you can get so many of those unsatisfying things in a row is a problem.
Yeah, and that's really what I'm commenting on. Like, it's not that, okay, to be continued itself and having to stop and come back, not that big of a deal. I just have the luck of the draw that I'm getting a bunch of them in a row and I'm like, I just want to get somewhere in this game without having to backtrack and go back to it again. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to do that again.
Are you taking advantage of the dialogue skipping and stuff? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I am.
So what I will say is this, that is the game's fault. It's not your fault. You're just kind of like following your nose and jumping around at random, like it is encouraging you to do. What I will say, and I'm not saying reserve judgment, I'm not saying, you know, anything like that. What I will say is, like, after you, you know, start kind of like getting some purchase, after you really get a good dig into it and those things start coming unlocked as the tumblers fall into place, I think that you're going to have a very different experience in the last third of the game.
Well, I will say as a comment that, like, all of the characters are slowly becoming more tolerable, more or less. Maybe not all of them. Some of them are becoming more intolerable. But anyway, the whole point is, like, I'm starting to learn more about the characters, but it's still kind of weird to me. And I can't really put my finger on why in this one, I just didn't immediately like anybody. And I really liked the characters in 999. But in this one, they just didn't hit the right notes for me for some reason.
Do you have any standouts right now for characters that you're like, oh yeah, This is one that I'm really digging at the moment.
I'm not really convinced about anybody. Like, I'm not like, yeah, they're so awesome. Like,
let me rephrase: most improved.
Okay. Kay. Okay. I guess, but like that's about it. Like, yeah, I haven't really gotten to enough with Tenmyoji or Quirk to really know anything about them. My favorite character is Golem, Golem, the very briefly appearing robot. Yep. That is my favorite character in this whole thing.
Who is weirdly appropriate?
Yeah.
not weirdly appropriate. Who is weirdly significant?
Yeah. Yeah. That guy. That guy is my favorite guy in this entire game. And by the way, like Sigma pisses me off. Sigma's perviness, all right? I've been commenting for a long period of time on my Twitter about all of the things that Sigma says. Sigma's perviness, in my opinion, doesn't really add anything to the game. And I think it's there for comedic relief or something. Mm-hmm. But it's not funny to me particularly because I've had to deal with many a jackass who acts the fool and doesn't realize when I'm not into that and they need to quit. And that is like Sigma is just like making these stupid comments and carrying on and like, ooh, you need like about pulling a lever. Ooh, well, you just need to grip it firmly from the base and work your way up and all this other bullshit and just like going on. And meanwhile, Clover's like, being a creeper, like stop being a fucking weirdo. Yep. And then, you know, he just turns and talks to Luna that way. And then Luna's like, you're being, like, really, this is making me uncomfortable. And he's just carrying on like a jackass. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, that just stresses me out because I've had to deal with a lot of guys like that myself. So, I mean, for me, like, it just is a big, like, no, I can't take this. Sporky in the Slack channel says that they're building up to something with the perviness, but I can't really see that whatever it is that they're building up to is going to really be worth it to me.
Right.
Like in my particular opinion, like, I mean, I guess if you're a dude, you think this is funny or you're like, ha ha ha. It's like me when I was in high school or something. But I mean, like for me particularly, not flying.
Let me elaborate on what Sporky said. They're not building up to why he's doing that, and they're not really building up for a justification for that particular character trait. They're building up for why the characters are reacting to him that way.
Okay.
All right. And so that is probably something to keep in mind. It is a regrettable choice, just like that. Oh man, that really regrettable line of dialogue in 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, where Jinpei and Akane are working toward getting in that elevator to get onto the flooded basement.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they're talking, you know, and it gets like that. Like that is a a character quirk for the point of view character that definitely does feel it's kind of like, okay, come on, guys.
Well, I mean, like, okay, Junpei and Akane from 999, like, because that kind of came up every once in a while, but you already knew that Junpei was, like, sweet on her. Like, I can tolerate that. I thought that was kind of funny, kind of gross, but I just, like, was like, okay, whatever. And then it moved on, and then that was the end of that. But with Sigma, it just keeps on fucking happening, like, with everybody. And I'm just like, I want to bitch smack somebody because somebody needs to be hit. So,
yeah,
you know, like that makes me, that also makes me mad.
Yeah. I think
so anyway, like I'm not to the point of totally flipping tables about this game. And like, I just happen to, I recognize that some of my frustration with the game, and Sigma aside, with the flow is just because I just happen to have the bad roll of the dice where I keep on hitting all the to be continued. So I'm sure the next thing I do is going to be a storyline beat. And then after that, I'm going to start hitting a bunch more storyline. And then at that point, things will be more, enjoyable. But it's been kind of like a war of attrition in the last week when I've been busy and frustrated and tired. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, like I'm primed and ready to get mad about something, you know?
Yeah. You know,
but I'm not hating on the game. I'm really not. I don't like the overly perviness. That's like too much, but and I don't like, it is a flaw to my mind about how it works out that I just, you know, anybody could roll into this game and end up hitting all these to be continueds, and then, you know, at the very end, finally unlock one ending, and then everything opens up. Like, to have to deal with that as, you know, like a way that things can fall out. It's unfortunate, but it's also part of how the game was designed. I mean, like with the flow chart, the way it is and stuff, it's going to happen.
Yeah. So it's to use an analogy, it's like when unraveling a cool story turns into untangling Christmas lights.
Yeah. And so like, overall, like I know from not really playing, but reading 999 on the iOS that, I enjoy, you know, like I even enjoy not knowing what the fuck is really going on at the end of the game. Like I know I'm going to reach the end of this game and really not know anything about what just happened, because that's what happened with 999. I'm just like, what? You know? And it's going to continue in that vein, but that's fine. It's kind of interesting because in this game, I feel that, you know, having some stuff unexplained is not only just completely legit, it works really well with this particular game.
Yeah.
You know, like it works well to just leave some things unexplained.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it's just the storytelling mechanism can be good. Unfortunately, it is not good on this particular playthrough that I'm dealing with right now. So, yeah, that's sad, because like I was hoping to, you know, get into a solid game and really like it. And
yeah, that sucks.
So hopefully, things start falling into place soon, and then I can stop being mad about it and I can move on with life. Because I know that overall I will like the game, but I will also obviously point out all of the flaws that I find with it.
Well, yeah, so, and as you should.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all. That's what I've been playing.
Resident Evil 5 and 6 and Virtue's Last Reward.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Ben, let's do a little bit more interrogating here. Did you finish Inside?
Yes.
Okay. Did you play anything else besides Inside?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't we do our stuff that is not Inside, then let's tag team Inside. And how about, I don't want to go too terribly long, there's stuff that I want to say about Inside that I want to spoil. So let's do like a miniature spoiler session after the credits. All right. What have you played besides Inside?
All right. We got Rocket League, typical fare. I've been playing some more Her Story. I accidentally reset the game, however, undid all the things that I had found. So I don't know if I'm going to go back and finish that or not, because I got some of the later videos, so I think I know the story, but I haven't gotten everything, so I don't know whether or not I should try and 100% it or not. So do you guys have any recommendations for, like...
Well, first off, 100%ing Her Story is something that made me want to flip a table on Cole, because Cole did not understand why I 100%ed that game. Okay, that's fine, Cole. It can be, you know, a disagreement. I would say that it's not necessary to 100% it. I felt possessed of the urge to do so of my own free will one day.
Okay.
So don't worry about 100%ing it. If you think you have the gist of it, like if you feel you're done with the experience, then I think you're good to go. Like you don't really need to go back in there and retype everything to try to figure things out.
Yeah.
In my personal opinion, I don't know, Cole.
Yeah. I would say there are probably guides that consist of just, you know, the brief search terms that you can do to get like that will guide you to what you need to see in order to see it.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if you've gotten to what you feel is a pretty satisfying, if not conclusion, at least kind of like, okay, like, yeah, I kind of know this. You have the experience of it. And like, just, oh man, I can't imagine just having all of the keywords that I use just like fall out the bottom of my computer like that. That sucks.
That's fine.
You know, so what I would say is like, look that up and at least like figure out where to start and maybe put like another hour into it just to see, you know, follow it and get a little bit more of it and then just like do some reading about it, because it seems like you have the experience anyway.
Yeah. I might also just wait a little while and go back to it later when like I've forgotten most of the things of it and just go into it fresh.
Yeah. It's not a long game. Like it's like a 3-hour game. You know,
it's really not. Yeah, it's not like a big investment to go back to it. But, you know, if you just lost everything, either wait a while or find a guide, probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the other game, I picked up Kentucky Route Zero because that was on sale this last weekend. And so I've played just the first act. So I haven't really played too much of it yet.
So you've gotten up through the mines.
I've driven from a gas station to somewhere else. But that's about it. Like, okay. the last thing that I did was the part where you have a map and you're like traveling along the map.
Okay.
Which was a cool mechanic. Yeah. So
I still have to play that game. It's still on my wish list along with 50 million other things.
Episode 4 just came out. And I need, like, I kind of just want to start back from the beginning and then just do like one session a night to get through it.
Do the episodes get longer?
I don't know.
This episode 1 was like maybe 10 or 15 minutes. It's pretty short.
You haven't done the full first episode. I'm sorry, Ben.
That's probably the case.
Yeah. This was like 3 years ago, but like I'm fairly certain that that episode 1 like takes you to the mines in order to get through it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because like episode, I don't.
Okay.
Just goes to show that I need to go and play this again, but like it's definitely longer than 15 minutes. I'd say that each episode that I've done has been 90 minutes or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
What do you think of it so far?
I don't quite know. I mean, basically, so the first one, the premise is you're at a gas station. It seems very spooky, you know, like you're talking to the gas station attendant and there's, you know, like all the dialogue that he has makes it seem like he knows more than what he's letting on to. and you know, he gets you to go to the basement of the gas station in order to, I think, turn the power on. And then you see people down there, but then they disappear. So it seems very ghostly and like, but it doesn't really seem like scary or anything. It just seems like spooky. And I don't know.
Atmospheric, would you say?
I would say there's definitely atmosphere there, yeah. Polygon atmosphere.
So what do you think of the appearance of it? Because like, I think it is like unquestionably one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen. But
I think I'm not a huge fan of the character like pictures, but like the environment is beautiful and like the buildings I think are beautiful and like, yeah.
Yeah, and it only gets like crazier from here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll. That's still a work in progress. I just started playing that a day or two ago. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. So I'm going to do mine. That is not inside.
Your outside games.
Yes, my outside games. The outside kits. So because I was on vacation, and because we're working up to summer JRPG, I spent most of my vacation playing Phantasy Star 4, but I'm going to talk about that at length later on. Instead, because I was in new places and playing Pokemon Go, and kind of getting more acquainted with not just games on my phone, but also free-to-play kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I fired up a game that I've been sitting on for a while, and I've been getting alerts from, but I've never really dove into it, and that is Final Fantasy Record Keeper.
Okay.
Okay.
What kind of records?
This is, so the conceit of this, you're playing as this plucky little scholar kid who is being directed by Dr. Mog to recover these paintings that are being corrupted by this dark force. Now, these paintings are actually depictions of battles and scenes and story beats from previous Final Fantasy games. And like the nice part is like after you get through that little tutorial and intro, that kind of fades away to the back. And then what you're presented with is this kind of tree of different little scenes that you can pick and then go through as kind of like these realm dungeon kind of things. And the actual gameplay part of this that I'm really kind of interested in is it is a mobile version of the turn-based Final Fantasy combat circa Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 6. All the way back to all of the graphics that are inside like the combat sections are 16-bit, even if it came out you know, on PlayStation, PlayStation 2, or PlayStation 3, like you have a 16-bit sprite rendering of Lightning or Squall or any of these. So like I immediately just want like a poster of all these like sprite designs of these things. Mm-hmm. But it's like a really simplified version of the active time battle kind of thing. And you kind of go in, you select this little dungeon node, and you, you know, do a string of fights, and then you fight a boss, and each of these has a little trick to it that is pulled like right from the game. So like when you're fighting the mist dragon, you have to make sure not to attack when it is in mist form, or else it will attack back. But you're doing like these little familiar story kind of things, and that is kind of the bulk of the game, and that stuff works great and looks great. Everything outside of it is a horrible free-to-play nightmare that looks like it was designed by somebody who doesn't design Korean MMOs but designs slot machines based on Korean MMOs. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to denigrate slot machines, Ben. I'm sorry.
But, no, you're fine.
but I'm looking at the, you know, just like trying to figure out, like, okay, every day you get a free like a relic draw or whatever it is, so you get a chance to get a little item or, you know, armor for your dudes as you upgrade them, and like, ah, oh, this is Cloud's weapon, so I'm going to give it to Cloud, and everything is going to be fine. But you do that, and then everything else is just like, hey, here's an event. It's, you know, Rain of Sorrow or whatever, and, you know, pay $30 for these, for the ability to get, you know, 11, not 10, 11 three-star plus draws, possibly. It's a random thing, though, and it has, like, 17 different currencies. Like, it's a real nightmare when you venture outside of the core of the game. Which is a bummer because, like, I don't know, I really dig the idea of playing Final Fantasy Combat just, you know, in between stuff at work or while I'm waiting for something to render or bounce, you know, like it's super bite-sized and super fun, but like, you know, everything outside of it is, it feels like it's trying to funnel me towards, like, out of confusion, giving them money.
Yeah. I like that poor UI design in order to trick people into giving you money.
It's like
untapped market.
I mean, it gets real heinous, right? Because like I mentioned, you know, you have Gil, which is mostly used to fund your weapon upgrades and your skill upgrades. You have Mithril, which is used again for those upgrades, but also to you can like spend a Mithril to like to heal yourself in the middle of battle, or you have gems. And gems are basically like 100 of those is a dollar, and you can spend a dollar to heal yourself in the middle of combat if you don't have any mithril from doing dungeons. So that's easy enough to do. However, anything that has that relates to like getting more characters or getting anything else, like it quickly gets into like Square just having no real gauge and no real kind of like sense for what things should cost in mobile. Like when I said $30, like, okay, 3,000 gems, you know, you pay for 10 draws, but you get. But you get 11. Okay, 3,000 gems. I want to take a look. No, that's $30 that they're wanting me to like commit to this like event. Like that is purely whale bait. And as a minnow, like not even minnow, as a plankton, I shouldn't be seeing whale bait. You know? Yeah. So I'm going to continue messing around with this because like I want to go through and play like this hyper cute, like super condensed version of the biggest fights from Final Fantasy IV. You know, which is like wisely it starts you off with like, hey, here's Final Fantasy VII, like the opening scenes of that, and then it dumps you into IV, and then like you jump around, like there's like a big almost like tech tree of like different places and ways you can go, but man, oh man, everything outside of that is a fucking nightmare. Have you guys had like any experience with like something like that, like where you just wander into a free-to-play nightmare?
I try to avoid free-to-play games pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, I don't necessarily avoid them entirely, but if they are free to play, like I generally limit how much time I'm messing with them just because I know that they turn into nightmares such as you describe. So yeah. So I try to avoid them, the particular hole you have fallen into, Cole.
Yeah. Ben, let's talk about Inside. Let's do spoiler free kind of stuff, just like generalities. Sure. And then after, so everybody's listening, if you're frustrated that we never talk about spoiler stuff, we're not going to go too terribly long on either this or the other one, but stick around after we pick a title after the end of everything to hear me and Ben talk about it. And Jala will let you go for that.
Yay!
Yeah. but inside, this is Playdead's new game. It's very obviously a spiritual successor to Limbo, right?
Yep, and that is the exact description I had in my mind for it as well.
what made you take the plunge into this, Ben?
Well, I mean, Limbo was a solid game, so I had enough good faith in them from that game that I thought that this would be interesting enough to play. I knew pretty much nothing about it. I had just seen screenshots of it from various things like E3. So,
man, this game doesn't, like, the screenshots don't do it justice.
It's a real pretty game. Yeah,
it really is. But, like, you have to see it in motion. Like, it is entirely an animation. Like, visually, it is incredibly well drawn and well rendered. And I think that, like, it's like one of the prettiest games I've seen. I know I've thrown that around a lot this episode, but like seeing it in motion, but like you look at a screenshot of this, please do not judge how this game looks based on a still. Anybody who's listening.
Mm-hmm. I do think that's fair. It's, I think it's like a very much a perfected version of Limbo where, you know, like not only are it has color now and that's like beautiful, but it's instead of it being 2D like Limbo was, it basically does as well with 3D, where like so 2D or Limbo I feel like was a great execution of like a 2D game, and this is a great execution of like a 2.5 3D game, you know.
Yeah And they use that to really good effect, like in the opening run where you're kind of like, again, you're a little boy running through a forest, at least at the start of this, like there mm-hmm. are threats in the background, and they actively use, like, there are people who are casting their flashlights into the foreground. And, like, the camera does these nice little, like, tilts as you go along, like, and as you're moving faster to kind of, like, show you a little bit ahead. But, like, you know, this is very much a 3D game. You're just, like, operating on a 2D, you know, line of control.
I do think it's interesting that the mechanic is very similar to Limbo, where you're basically running right the entire game, with few exceptions, you know.
to the point where you can just hold down the right trigger. And it just runs automatically for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting that it was that close to Limbo in that kind of core mechanic or whatever. But it's definitely like a different atmosphere, since that's the buzzword for this podcast, than Limbo was. And I feel like the narrative of the game like raises way more questions than Limbo does, but that could just be that I don't remember enough of Limbo since I played it so long ago. But yeah.
Limbo has a pretty conclusive ending. It's yes. Everything that happens in between the start and the end that's kind of like, so what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
tell me, Ben, do you think this is a scary game?
I think parts of it evoke scary ideas. The same way that Limbo had that as well. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Limbo, like the worms that would control your emotion,
yeah,
was a very like scary idea, and reinforced by the fact that you would lose control of your character, or you had limited control of your character. Mm-hmm. I think there's other things in this game that do similar things to that.
Yeah. This studio loves mind control, apparently.
Yeah.
And they use that to really good effect. Like when you start mind controlling like the zombie guys around you to like do those puzzles, like, you know, the middle third of the game feels very much like, oh, this studio really, really loves Out of This World and Abe's Odyssey, like is what it feels like, or Abe's Exodus or any mm-hmm. of those. And I use that, and, you know, and people who listen to that episode of Watch Out for Fireballs will say like, oh, you're insulting the game. I think that it takes the best sides of that. And really puts it forward. I think this is a really scary game. I think it's really funny too.
Okay.
There's some stuff like the pigs or the birds or just God, the entire end portion that, like, you know, I think like grotesquery equally serves.
Let's not
do that. But like,
it is a short game, so
yeah. I don't think it's a spoiler to say, you know, that there's some grotesque stuff that happens all throughout this game, and grotesquery is used for comedy in a bunch of stuff, not just this game, not just in games, for comedy and for horror. And I think that it's like super effective at like flitting back and forth between the two of them while kind of like always hitting this note of being like slightly off and kind of keeping your teeth on edge, you know?
Yeah. So another, yeah, another thing that carried over in this game that Limbo had is very violent deaths. And you kind of, you puzzle solve by dying a whole lot. And so there's, yeah, many times when you're playing this game that you just see your character die pretty brutally. So
you say it's short. How short is it?
You could beat this in like 2 or 3 hours, I think.
Yeah, I took I took 3, and that's because I took time out to go after the secrets. And
yeah,
those secrets are so fun to find.
Yeah, they're very well hidden. I mean, I did a walkthrough to find the secrets, but yeah, that definitely would be a challenge if you were not using a walkthrough and trying to figure them all out yourself. That would be very difficult. So
most of them that I got, I was just kind of like poking around trying to progress. I think it speaks volumes to the game's overall design that the secrets aren't just like throwaway. There are some of those secrets that are like entirely new, like they could be stage gimmicks.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they put entire puzzles in these Easter eggs, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is nice.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
Yeah, if nothing else, it's a very, very pretty game and very pretty in a grotesque way, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I look forward to spoiling it in a few minutes.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's for people who've already played it. Like, I know a lot of people who are listening have played it as well. And it's hard to talk about the game without talking about the turn and without talking about, you know, just some of the more delicate parts of it. Jala, we've kind of dominated this. Like, are you interested in like Inside? Is this like, did you play Limbo? Do you have a lot of affection for this developer? Like, what where do you stand vis-a-vis?
I have Limbo in my backlog. I have not played it, but I looked at Inside when everybody was starting to talk about that in the Slack channel, and it looked interesting to me, and it might be something that might generate like enough interest that I'll go and play Limbo and then go play this. Or do you feel that it doesn't really matter if I play Limbo and I can play this one and it's fine?
I would say play Limbo first, because it might be a Resident Evil 5, Resident Evil 6 situation.
Gotcha,
Yeah. Where Limbo might not seem as polished after playing Inside, maybe.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think Limbo is worthwhile. I think that it would be hard to go back to it. You're spot on, Ben. I think that Inside is a better game than Limbo is. I don't know if Inside is going to be as influential as Limbo was, and I think that's a little bit of a shame, but I think it speaks to the level of difficulty of what they did with Limbo, that like it won't be, or of what they did with Inside, rather, to the level of difficulty of Inside, that it won't be, you know, as imitable as Limbo was.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. So do you want to button it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Yes.
Already put in the break, Ben.
Dang.
So thank you so much for listening. Like we said, if you want to hear kind of more in-depth discussion of Inside, or at least something that acknowledges that that spoilers exist, stick around after we pick a title. But we're not there just yet. I mean, we're at the point where it's almost like, hey, thanks everybody who came out to the Austin show. But if you want to meet everybody who is on the show, Ben, Jala,
currently, just for
this episode, that is what I mean. That is the place to do it. And we are so looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to hanging out with both of you. It's going to be a good time. Otherwise, you know the usual stuff you can do for the show. Please tell friends. We say it all the time, but it is the only way we grow. We do not advertise this show one lick. And, you know, if you like us and if you like somebody else and you think somebody else might like us, well, just play matchmaker for us. Be our pod cupid. But otherwise, you know, there's the Facebook that we mentioned, participate in the multiplayer, donate to Patreon and join us in Slack. That is always very lively. And a good, cool, supportive environment. But otherwise, please just come back next week. Is there anything that I'm forgetting, Jala or Ben?
Nope. Yeah.
Okie dokie. So I've been Cole Ross @ Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Jala Chan in places.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah, and stick around for some titles and for inside spoilers.
Inside Baseball.
Let's see. Yeah, that's a pretty good title. Inside Baseball. A little bit light this week. Anybody have any ones they want to put forward?
Outside Games.
I got whale bait and table flipping.
Table flipping was one of mine too.
Do you mind if I stylize that as table flipping?
Nope.
Yeah, that's fine.
Go for it.
Or not. Yeah, either way.
Whatever.
Let's see here. Anything else? Because I have like a handful of others.
No. What else do you have?
I have table dismount, just the word atmosphere, and then inside baseball. I think table flipping would be good.
Okay. Flipping all the tables.
Cool. All right, Jala. Ben and I are going to stick around for another handful of minutes.
Okay, have fun with that. I'm going to go to sleep because tomorrow is a very stressful day.
Yeah, best of luck to you.
I got tables to flip.
See you in 4 days.
So, yeah, inside baseball, that's that last tenth of the game.
Yeah, so that's where you go inside something, and maybe that's the reason for the title, but... Yeah, that is super grotesque, but super beautiful. And, like, I don't know how they did, like, the programming for it, too, because, like, how it changes shape, and but then it'll, like, grow legs in certain spots, and then, like, grows arms in certain spots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just impressed by that. But then it's amazing that, you know, like, so they give you such a sense of catharsis and that you're, you know, like, breaking through all the environments at this point. But then... On top of that, they're keeping it a puzzle game as well, mm-hmm. you know, and you're having to figure out like the controls of this like new entity, you know.
that moves in exactly as ungainly a fashion as you would expect it would based on the way it looks.
Yeah. Oh, man. And the physics of it, like climbing on top of something.
The way it figures out like what part of it needs to go.
Yeah. Like when you press up, it'll like. You know, shift itself slightly up to try and grab something
transferring a box from one side of it to another.
Yeah. And then squeezing through holes, you know, like it's just like it's revolting. But then it's also just and the noises, too, where it's like multiple entities like moaning as it hits and stuff.
Yeah. I have no idea what the fuck it means, but like as you start, like, you know, there are a couple of times where you straight up kill somebody, like you ice somebody by dropping on top of them, and the fact that the blood sticks around on the side of it that it hit, and then you can actually see as that skin kind of like undulates around to the side, you know, as it like rolls along and like will wash off with the water.
Yeah. And then how also in that same area when you're moving the wooden post, how when it goes over the body, there's a streak of like blood that it creates.
Yep.
It's just so grotesque.
Yeah.
One of the things. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
While we're talking about the leg monster that you impregnate, I think I have no idea what it means. Did you notice that the way it moves changes depending on how many legs it has at the moment?
I know it forms. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I know it forms more legs like as it gets going.
Like they emerge from the center. Yeah, there has to be like some kind of crazy like procedural kind of thing happening. Talk about hiding your light under a bushel basket, though.
Well, I mean, it's a 3-hour game.
It's a 3-hour game, but like just like the amount of work that went into that, like, you mm-hmm. know, this probably isn't the most useful word to apply to this, but it feels brave to take something that like otherwise would be the entirety of another game, like, oh, it's Jimmy's leg blob monster, and like let's make it into, you know, the just the entirety of an experience, not quite like an itch.io, but like putting that at the back of what otherwise feels like a pretty standard, if not, you know, exceptional, a pretty standard yet exceptionally designed puzzle platformer. Just feels like just whoa. And people told me there was a turn coming in this, and I thought that it was when you died or when the when the water ghost came and like revived you and the water was moving. So I was operating under the assumption like, oh, like, you know, gravity doesn't work the same anymore, and that is what the turn was. But when that happened, I didn't expect the turn to be so close to the end.
I guess there are two weird parts. So that part, I don't understand what was going on with that, because like that one character up until that point, solely there to murder you in like pretty violent ways, you know, but for some reason turns you invincible at that point and like allows you to breathe underwater. Like, okay, I don't know why, but okay.
There, and I heard so there's something like she plugs something into you.
Yes.
Is what I've seen.
Yes. It's like, and I think it's something that's similar to like the mind control device, I think. Yeah. But still, like, if that was the goal of that person, why did they not do that in any of the times before when you die a bunch of times, you know?
I agree. Like, you know, I'm sure that maybe there is some kind of explanation for it, but as of right now, everything that I've read has not been satisfying. But like, you know, it's still a fun thing. Like, figuring out that it freezes like a boo when you shine a light on it was an amazing aha moment for me.
Sorry, say that again?
It freezes like a boo when you shine a light on it. When you're in the bathysphere.
Sorry. Boo. Yeah. From Mario. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it seemed to make sense. That's exactly what I thought of as soon as I saw the mechanic. It's like, oh, okay, this is a modern boo. That's fine. Yep. But then, some of the mechanics were interesting where there were a lot of times where it's like, both with that thing and with the dogs, it does a great job of making it where it's like they way outpace you. And so you have to figure out how to get enough of a head start that outpacing, like that they won't be able to catch up to you when you get to the goal marker, you know? That was really well done, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, right down to like, there has to have been either a tremendous amount of testing or just some kind of way, again, to procedurally like rubber band this or limit it to give you the illusion that you're in more danger than you're actually in, because so much of the time I would escape incredibly narrowly, like in a way that felt improbable, that like made me realize, oh, I've been holding my breath for the past minute.
You know? Yeah. And then there's the one area too, where it's like, it's the sound waves or whatever
that like blow you up. Sonic booms.
Yeah. So trying to figure out this game. Okay, so the part at the beginning of the forest, like, so the main bad guys are these like mime looking creatures. It looks very similar to like that one game. What is it? The Rest of Us.
We Lucky Few.
Yeah, that's it. It looks pretty similar to that, right? They all look crazy. They'll chloroform you if they catch you, or shoot you if they catch you.
I read them more as G-Men, like the fact that they were rolling around in vans and would like come after you. I never got a close enough look at one to actually see them as like Harlequins, like you're describing.
Gotcha. Did you get any of the endings where they like put a rag around your mouth?
Yeah, I thought it was them trying to subdue you.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. I guess also at this point too, they're shipping off people in trucks, right? They're shipping them off to the city, right?
Yeah, I assume for like programming, like for those, like some of the most kind of effective things, like the like where you're marching in sync with them as the machine watches you, like the some stuff in the first third of this game feels like the Apple like 1984 commercial. A little bit. Like that kind of sound, like, oh, life is completely devalued here.
Yeah, so I thought it reminded me of like the idea of the Holocaust, where it's like shipping people off to a unfun place, you know. But then when you get to the pig farm is like the second main area, you can see the same sort of mind control things that was in Limbo is also here, right?
Yeah,
where
they're testing that tail on the
Yeah, and they're testing that on the pigs, and I think there's one pig you run into where it's like running back and forth at you. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, I forget if you only see them in the background or if you actually rip one out of a pig or not. I can't remember.
You do end up having to rip one out of a pig in order to proceed.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so, okay, so that's like the idea is, okay, so they're shipping off people, but then they're also experimenting on pigs to use this sort of mind control thing that they'll eventually use on people. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the city, you see all the people there, and they are mind controlled, but then also being programmed to do specific tasks. So, and then by the time in the fourth or fifth act, they're completely zombies, right?
Yeah.
And then you yourself can control them if you get in the helmet.
Yeah, for that big set piece thing where you are kind of trying to amass a number of them to trip the pressure plate.
Yeah, which is great. That was such a great puzzle. Especially with the way they stage it, where it's like you kind of visit all these rooms and there's nothing you can do at any of these rooms. And then you get to that weight plate or whatever and you see 30 and you see a countdown as soon as you step to it to 29 and you immediately, immediately clicks like, oh man, I got to get a lot of people here.
Yep. And the way that they, again, there are no words in this game. The way that they communicated that to you by having one standing on it at the, when you find it there, it's demonstrating like it is counting how many people are on it. Before we got to the leg blob, the thing that blew me away about the animation, which I could already tell was really good, was when you have a whole mob of these, I forget what the threshold is, they can help you do those big jumps. Like to get the last one, you have to, I love the fact that the last guy is dead.
Yes.
Like they don't have to be alive. You just have to drag his corpse onto there and then that's there. But the way that the zombies would pick you up and throw you and then also catch you if you were dropping.
Yes.
And they would work in concert like that. The degree of difficulty in that is staggering.
Yeah. And I think with that last hidden puzzle where you have to have half of them on top of the elevator and half of them with you.
Yep.
And that kind of shows that off too, where it's like you need at least three or four in order for that to work. But then not only is it a cool kind of subtle feat of programming, which is it just works seamlessly, you don't even think of it in terms of, what's going on with the mechanics, but it's just, it's just the art style or whatever. But it also kind of primes you for this idea of this last monster or whatever, or this last being, even though they're programmed, that they're helping you in the entire time, so mm-hmm. that kind of pays off at the end.
So was there a point when you realized that you weren't breaking out of somewhere, that you were breaking into something?
I guess as you start to go to the city, it starts to make more sense because they start to count upwards, because I think at the city, it has maybe two or something like that. And then as you go into more and more buildings, it's three, four, five.
As two what? I'm sorry?
Is it 2-1? No, I think it counts upwards.
Areas? Area numbers?
Yeah. I know the offices are numbered.
Shit. Yeah. You get to the observation tanks, it's four, right?
Yeah, and I think it might start when you get in the submarine, maybe, and that's where you start to see maybe 2 and 3. I can't remember if there's one in the city.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah. I wish I could say the idea really solidified prior to this, but I really realized I'm not breaking out of somewhere. I'm breaking into a place when I got to the tank, when the scientists didn't care. That I was right there, when you walk up there and press, your kid presses his face against the glass like a kid.
Yeah.
Realized, this is what I'm here for. But they the beginning of it feels so much an escape and pursuit kind of thing that is a subtle turn, and I wish that I could pinpoint exactly when they intended for you to notice that.
Yeah, I think one place I'd want to test it is in the one room with the water on the ceiling. If you could drop down then, where there's two people are there, mm-hmm. whether or not they attack you or not. I would guess they do, but yeah, I did notice that as well. When you get to that final area with the scientists, they no longer care about you. And yeah. I wasn't sure if I interpreted that as like I'm safe now, or I might have more interpreted it as whatever's inside this room is more important than what I'm doing. Like right. They don't care anymore,
Yeah. I don't have a read on the story. The most salient thing that I heard was that the leg monster is mind controlling you to bring you in, and that creature in turn might be mind controlled by something else that should be the player. They're playing with that, like, there are layers to it, but, like, that wasn't readily apparent to me until I watched the optional ending.
Yeah, and so that was something that kind of clicked for me after I did that, too, is after doing the optional ending and then reading about it. So if you do the optional ending, so you have to find all these orbs, and you pull off the power to each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you find a... Sorry, go ahead.
It deactivates the mind control around it, too.
Yeah, and then you go into a spaceship and then do the same thing with that, right? Is mm-hmm. that a spaceship? Yeah. And then that tells you to go back to the cornfield, and then if you go there and down to that thing, you have to put in a code, which I don't know how you would figure that out if you did not look that up, yeah. Right?
That has to be like a Fez or PT kind of thing where they were relying on the community. Collectively doing that.
Yeah. But then after you do that, the ending is, so you pull out a last one. And so what I've read is that's supposed to symbolize the character pulling out the mind control for himself. And so that's why the game ends, is that you can no longer control the boy.
Yeah. Because, or you can no longer control whatever is controlling the boy.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that as well.
Yeah. I mean, just like we see that with, there are times where you mind control something to put on its own mind control helmet that is moving something else. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that might be like the, you know, kind of like Inception part of this game.
Yeah, the meta commentary. God, this is such a delightful game.
certainly the puzzle design is great. The settings are also amazing. Yeah, like the water puzzles towards the end were so cool.
The only part that really bothered me or like dragged was the bathysphere stuff. Like
where you're just hopping around
busting out the walls and stuff like that. I just felt like that outstayed its welcome a little bit. And on the balance, it's probably okay because it got us some really good, like, tense stealth kind of stuff with the Ringus. That stuff was great. I just wish that accounted for a larger percentage of it and they got rid of more of the kind of like you're in an incredibly slow moving thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, that was also a slow part for me, but I think it was mostly because, like, I didn't like the Ringu thing, so I thought it was more of just like, oh, that's just me being, like, not wanting to deal with these things chasing you underwater where you're slow moving and at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
But, so I didn't have a huge problem with it, but man, like, so many of the puzzles are great, and, like the double fan puzzle when you're in the bath, you know, going through... Like, so many of them are so cool where it's, like, the design of it is you're going to watch yourself die violently, and then you're going to figure out how you should have done it, you know? Yeah. But there's no way to figure out the puzzle without, like, going through this, like, morbid trial and error first.
Yeah, and they put so much effort into those sections that, like, it's very clear that that is an intentional part of the design. You know, kind of like in a MacVenture thing where they really play up the death descriptions and the death scenarios and things to make you to really make you keenly aware that you have to be keenly aware, you know. And I've heard complaints levied against this that it's too stressful, that like, man, I just can't stand dying over and over again. I think that this game requires you to have a much more loose and relaxed relationship with not just failure, but temporary setback. And at the very least, even if that is a concern, the checkpointing is mostly on point.
Yeah. And how you can like load any part of this game and it just like immediately starts is so nice, you know, but as far as like replayability, I like, that's one of the, like, that's one of the coolest ways to like be able to go back to any point in the game. I thought that checkpointing was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back and do the Sonic Boom one again, because I think that, now that I know the solution to some of those puzzles, like the way to actually create your safe haven, that might be a really satisfying thing to do, because it's basically a rhythm game at that point. Like knowing exactly when the next boom is going to come is a really integral part of that.
Yeah, and man, the sound design on it is so good too. Yeah, for those sections, it feels very much like Dead Space almost, you know, where it's like science fiction-y, you don't know what's going on. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool game. It's definitely like one of the more like, I feel like, artistic games I've played this year as well. And it's like, so I do think it's very impressive that like that much story and that much like, and that many puzzles are all crammed into like a 3-hour experience, you know, mm-hmm. because it's a super polished game.
Yeah. It's weird to call a game that has this distinctive kind of voice understated, but mm-hmm. it really is like, I don't know that if it was any more kind of, this is a bad word for it, but flamboyant, like if it was any more like, you know, in your face about any one particular aspect of it, I think that its subduedness and its, you know, kind of reserved nature is really works to its credit and makes it feel, again, you know, let's just throw it in here, Pee-wee's magic word, atmospheric, mm-hmm. in a way that I don't know that I've experienced, at least so far this year.
Well, I was going to say, similar to The Witness, it gives you little to no prompts on how the game works.
Right.
The Witness does, in fact, give you prompts, like, very rarely, given that it's, like, you know, a 30-hour game. But, like, this one, Inside gives you absolutely no prompts, you know?
Well, it's
like,
you have to figure the deaths, out. Right.
Well, there's that, but, like, even the controls, like, how to, like, hold something.
Oh, yeah.
They do not tell you how to do that. Like, mm-hmm. what movement is, they do not tell you how to do that. You know, like, obviously, like, if you're playing on a joystick, it makes more sense as far as movement, but, like, on a keyboard and mouse, like, for example, WASD doesn't work, but only the arrows work.
Oh,
and
like, shit, really?
Right control works, but left control doesn't work. So, like, things like that, it's very... So, I mean...
Perhaps, that feels really archaic, wow.
Well, I mean, perhaps you could go in and change the controls, and maybe that's, like, how it is. But mm-hmm. the fact that, like, they limit the controls, but then they don't tell you what they are, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying that it's... I feel like it's a design choice to, like... make you completely immersed in the game, you know?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you on that. The thing I was calling archaic was arrow keys. God, if I have to use yeah. I never want to use arrow keys for anything except like text selection.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of is maybe it's, I don't even think it's easier to use with the given it that's right control, but I don't know.
I know. Yeah, it is a cool game. If you're listening to this, obviously you've played it. Otherwise, shame on you. Oops. You really should have played it.
You can still play it.
Yeah.
But it's $20, right?
Yeah. You know, and that'll probably trip some people's radars for like $20 for a 3-hour thing. Like, you know, you have to decide what that $20 is worth to you. Taken on its own, devoid of the price, I think that this is a really worthwhile thing to experience.
I do as well, and if you try translating it right, like I feel like a lot of people would pay $60 for a 9-hour game, and mm-hmm. this is the same ratio. So,
yeah. The psychology of pricing.
Yeah.
Yeah.